Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
David, good morning. How you doing?
I'm all right, Tommy. Needed this weekend to kind of recharge my batteries.
I'll bet you did.
For sure.
I'll bet you did. Tell me, I guess what we know, I don't know what's the best way for you to present this information, so I'll just turn it over to you. You're a great communicator and reporter. What's changed? What do we know that we didn't know? Where is the investigation headed? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two main themes that we were looking at and that I think people are still concerned about. First of all, the biggest theme is the victims and the people who were affected by this. I mean, that's absolutely, I think, should be our number one priority as a community and making sure that people are okay. I've heard from so many people who were, you know, either there and escaped with their lives and are feeling, you know, PTSD and are feeling wayward and all of that. I think that's got to be our first priority. I think second has been the question of safety going forward, and making sure that we understand where the safety systems work and don't work, you know, to protect large crowds and where we can reduce risk, because you're never going to be able to prevent somebody who wants to attack. This has been a theme that we've been hearing from Superintendent of Police Ann Kirkpatrick, that, you know, that he wanted to defeat the system, and he did, and he would have even if the bollards had been in place that were supposed to protect from that were installed specifically to protect against this kind of attack. But it's all about putting in as many defenses as possible to prevent something like this from being as effective as it was. And then the third thing that I've been focused on over the last week has been trying to understand who this guy Shamsuddin Jabbar was and why he did this. And I don't know that we're ever going to know exactly and get it completely figured out, because who can understand people who have these feelings that they need to do something like this. But it's been fascinating for me to look into his history and to see that he was a U.S. Army veteran who was well liked and, you know, really looked up to by his fellow soldiers in the U.S. Army in the 2010 to 2015 timeframe, and then started having major problems in his life with three divorces between 2012 and 2020, and, you know, really bad financial problems where he was needing to go into foreclosure to be able to settle his final divorce in 2022, and then starts getting into this cloistered community and recording audio recordings on the internet where he's talking about how music is the devil's voice, and talking about, you know, being driven to do terrible things, and then starts scouting with his Meta glasses on October 31st, the French Quarter, as a target, and going and looking and seeing what all is there and then coming back and executing it and taking his whole family and everybody who knew him by surprise and recording videos the day before the attack saying, I want to kill my family, but that wouldn't make the headlines that need to, you know, show the war between the believers and the non-believers. And so he ends up doing this instead. And it's just awful. And, you know, I've heard from people saying, why are we giving this guy any more attention? But I think the FBI is focused on getting all of this information out there because we want to understand what drives people to do this kind of thing. There has been an increase in Islamist attacks, radicalization of people in the name of Islamic State and other Islamist groups and all around the world in the last several years. And so here we are now. We've been targeted.
When I saw your piece on Channel 4 about his rantings about the music and this and that and the other thing, and I don't want to offend anybody here, but you can go down Bourbon Street and you can hear people of all different religions ranting against this or ranting about that and not sounding a lot different than that. I guess for people that are thinking that should have served as some kind of warning, because there is freedom of religion in this country, freedom of expression, and he was talking about music being Satan's work and everything else, but at no point did he talk about a terrorist attack or anything, did he?
Right. Well, I listened to his recordings from 11 months ago where he talked about the influence that popular music, he specifically talked about rap music, has on people, driving people to violence. And when I heard what he was saying, it sounded like he would be on the opposite side of this, not being driven to violence himself, but warning against it and talking about how Islam teaches you to not follow Satan into being violent and doing these kinds of things. And then he himself, 11 months later, does exactly that. And that's what's, you know, and we've heard this in every religion and every, you know, thought group across time, talking about how music can be the devil's instrument.
That's what I was saying.
People.
You could have plugged in any religion from what I heard, really. So for people that think the FBI should have noticed this and noticed that, I don't know how that is a valid discussion at all.
No, I don't think so at all. And because I listened to all of those recordings, there was about an hour's worth of recordings that he had posted, and I listened to them all. And I would have thought from listening to them that he was basically saying, if you're a good Muslim, you're going to reject Satan driving you to violence and driving you to, you know, disregard your spouse and all of these things that he ended up doing. And so it's really, I don't think that we have any clearer picture or understanding of how somebody who was a dedicated U.S. Army soldier and an IT whiz and a real estate entrepreneur could end up doing this. And so, I think it's a worthy effort to try to find those things out and try to figure out if there are ways to have warning signs to stop this stuff earlier. But in this case, I just don't see like this clear indication that they should have known or anybody should have known.
Yeah, let me take a quick break because I want to talk about the videos that were released, and I don't know where they were released, who had access to this. Again, I don't know who monitors all of this. There are people texting me saying the FBI this, the FBI that, and I don't know. You know, I think not to defend the FBI because I don't know what I don't know, but it seems like for security reasons, a lot of things they may prevent, we never know about. When something doesn't get prevented, then obviously we do know about it. But was there any reasonable, any intelligent explanation of how they would have known this was going to happen if he posted the video 24 to 25 hours before the attack? David Hammer, our guest, trying to walk us through all of this. 852, 8 till 9, traffic now, WWL. All right, 8:56, 4 till 9, couple of minutes left with David Hammer, who continues to investigate the Bourbon Street attacker and the nature of the attack itself. One thing I'm confused about the timeline on the videos that were released, he released videos, I don't know how long they were. Tell me what he did release 24 to 25 hours before the attack, David.
Yeah, there was a series of five videos that he posted on Facebook about, like you said, 24 to 25 hours before the attack. He would have still been back in Houston at that point because he drove to New Orleans that next afternoon, December 31st, and then ended up attacking at 3:15 in the morning on January 1st. So, you know, and you said this before the break, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's a legitimate question, and I've heard it from a number of high-ranking people in the city. Who's monitoring these videos? Could somebody have gotten a message that he was planning to attack to the folks in New Orleans and the security folks that were in place with NOPD and Troop NOLA and other units that were deployed to the French Quarter? And I don't know what I don't know either, so I don't know all of the inner workings of how you know, social media posts are monitored and that kind of thing can be flagged, but I just don't think that from what we understand, and again, we haven't seen the videos and I haven't heard everything that he said in the videos. I've just gotten what the FBI portrayed about those five videos, but we don't know that there was anything that would have indicated that there was this hard target of Bourbon Street at this, at such and such a time on New Year's Day.
In terms of who,
and anything specific.
Him being monitored, was there any indication that he had been radicalized or that he would be on anybody's watch list or draw anybody's attention at that point?
No, because it appears from everything that I've understood from my reporting that this was all being, you know, that the FBI ended up finding this stuff by going through his computers and his IP addresses and everything after the fact.
And I guess so the point I'm making is if you want the FBI to monitor everybody's Facebook posts, you can have that. You're going to need a lot of FBI agents, and there are going to be a lot of privacy concerns. So you got to watch what you ask for, right?
Exactly. So if you're making he makes this post, the first post that he makes at 1:29 in the morning on December 31st, mm-hmm. is to say, I want to kill my family, but that wouldn't make the news headlines about the war between the believers and the disbelievers. Does that get a red flag put on it by Facebook that then gets communicated to the FBI, that gets communicated to other law enforcement? I don't know, but that doesn't seem like it's like you say with the First Amendment and all of the things that people say online that are getting more and more aggressive by everybody, it seems. Is it reasonable to expect that people are going to be able to identify those things and put a flag on them?
You can't have it both ways. You can't say the FBI is incompetent. You can't say that the FBI is prying into my business. You can't say that the FBI is overreaching and then criticize when something like this happens because That's it right. was posted to Facebook. Am I missing something, David, or not?
I agree with you 100%, Tommy.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. That's an old expression my mother used to say, and I guess it's still accurate. Thank you, David. I appreciate your efforts and your time as always. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. We'll take a break, come back, talk about alcohol and cancer.